Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Here's a question for tonight. Let's start off. I don't have sheets for you. You'll have to manage without sheets this evening. I hope it'll be okay. We'll see how it goes. Here's a question for tonight. What are some fundamental differences? The Gemara says, the Medrash says that there were three things that the Jewish people merited as a result of Avraham's chesed that he did with the angels. So let me give you the three things and let's just figure out the difference. They merited the man. The man was somehow affiliated with something that Avraham did for the Malachim. We have the Amud Ha'anan, the cloud that protected the Jewish people, surrounded them and led the way through the Midbar. And we have the Mayim, the man, the Anan, the cloud, and the water that they were able to drink. And what would you say, what is the fundamental, if you have to like list either in significance, importance, how would you classify those different types of things that Klal Yisrael gets? Man, Mayim, and the Anan.
Classification, or how they relate to what Avraham did?
Yeah, both. And then like
from Miriam?
Yeah, no, even though the Miriam is also affiliated with the water, Chazal traced it all the way back to Avraham as well.
Maybe Mon, which was, had any flavor you wanted, since Avraham gave him the choice, you know, he gave him one tongue per...
You're putting it, so before we get to which ones came from which, what's the difference between those three? And if you have to classify in terms of
water,
mun, and the cloud.
Food,
and shelter.
Protection.
Yeah, food, drink, and shelter.
Okay.
With the three basic things that any person needs to just survive.
Okay, we got them. So we have food, drink, and then the anan protection. And which one would you say is the... If you had to say, yeah, would be the, let's say you put it in a physical, spiritual realm.
I say man.
Water.
Interesting. Now we have all of our options, right? We have, so the man is our physical food.
Are you talking about spiritual or?
So if you talk about it in a spiritual sense, we have the man, which is food. Now it was a spiritual type of food, but it provided us with our most physical, basic need of sustenance. We have the water, which goes along with the food, and we have the anan, the cloud. So Chazal say like this. Let's take. This is the Chazal we'll take a look at tonight. Tanit Rabbi Yishmael says as follows: V'schar shlosha zochu l'shlosha. The merit of three things that Avraham did for his guests, Klal Yisrael merited three things in the Midbar. V'schar chema v'chalav, from bringing him the fat and the milk and the food that Avraham brought to his guests, zochu l'man. They merited the food, the different types of man, which could be all the different flavors. He said the different types of foods that he brought out. Bischar v'hu omed aleihem, in the schar that Avraham stood on top of them while they were eating. The Torah describes that Avraham stood over them, watching, taking care of them. So in the schus that Avraham stood over them, taking care of them, they merited the anan, protected them.
You sound like a stretch.
Excellent. That's my point. We'll get to that. That's the question I want to ask.
Okay, sorry.
Good. No, that's the problem that I have. And bischar yukachna ma'at mayim, and in the reward that Avram said, and you'll take a little bit to drink, they merited the water.
What if Avram didn't do these things?
So, excellent question. So as you hear, there are a lot of different points to this Chazal. Number one, it sounds like Chazal are, so like, and what would the Ribbono Shel Olam have done if Avram wouldn't have done that? He's going to leave us in the desert without any money, without any food, without any drink. A fine point in terms of how that happened. Let's leave that aside. I that would be a whole separate. Let's not get distracted. It's a fair point, but look at what happens. In other words, I'm bothered by the same point that Avi's bothered by. When you take the chem and the chol of the food that he gave, and that results in the man, okay, that fits. When you take that, I'll give you to drink. So Hashem says, I'll give you to drink. Avram gives his guest, I'll give Klal Yisrael, I'll give the mayor. But who omed aleihem? Avram is standing on top of them. And because Avram stood above them while they ate, we get the Anan. Now one could make an argument that the Anan is the most spiritual of all of them, this cloud, this miraculous cloud that offered the protection. The cloud, Chazal speak about, would kick out anyone who did anything wrong. It would literally expel them from the camp. This was a cloud that was a very spiritual type of cloud that protected not only the physical existence but the spiritual existence. Because he stood over them, we got the cloud. Where is the connection necessarily in that?
Why was he standing over them? What's the significance?
Excellent. What's the significance of standing over them?
Protecting them. Then it's a very straight connection.
Maybe like a waiter that's not like filling up
their glass.
So we can take that approach, but let me add another medrash to add to the problem with this who omed olam. The medrash is another medrash that says that's bothered by who was standing upon who. When the psukim describe in the very opening of the parsha, Avraham sitting at his tent waiting for guests to come, the pasuk says vihine shlosho anashim nitzavim olav, and behold he looked up and there were three people nitzavim olav who were standing over him. He was sitting down recovering, waiting for guests to come, and the way the Torah describes it is that when he looks up, behold there are these three people standing above him. What's that?
Behold, there were three people there.
So when the Malachim came to look.
The two Malachim. Could be.
Okay.
So the Medrash describes Avraham as having these three people on top. The Medrash asks, well, wait a minute. A couple took him later after Avraham begins serving them. Now it says, he gave it before them. Vahu omed aleihem. And now he's standing upon them. So the Medrash picks up on the switch that before he starts serving them, as he's sitting in the front of his tent, the Torah describes the Malachim as standing on top of him. And then he begins to serve them, and then the Torah goes out of its way to describe a situation in which the roles have reversed, and now it's Avraham standing and they're sitting. So we went from a situation of them standing while he's sitting, to he's standing and now they're sitting. Says the Medrash, and shelo yotzo yedem, before he started to work with them, nitzavim olav, they're standing on top of him. Kevon sheyotzo yedem, now that they've put out their hands, so to speak, and now he's serving them, who omed aleihem, he is now standing on top of them, a maso mutelas aleihem, and his fear has now been instilled in him. Michael Mirsos, Gavriel Mirsos. The Malachim Gavriel and Michael are literally trembling. So he went from a point in which they're on top of him, not only is he on top of them, but he's causing them to tremble, from the same phrase of Vahu Omein Aleim, so that his standing on top of them not only creates the merit of the Anan hundreds of years later in the desert. So he's like, what's the big deal? So he stood on top of them. Why? On the simplest level, he took care of them, Hashem took care of us. But that there's clearly something there in his standing on top of them. And not only that, but Chazal see in his standing on top of them that somehow created fear, awe, something in the Malachim, which is a strange concept of Chalal, and why should his standing on top of them, serving them, create any type of fear in that sense?
I would have thought that just the Anan would have been, let's say, merit of the fact that Avram had an open tent, and he was just, you know, because we talk about his tent. Why are we specifically saying because he was standing over them? I mean, it sounds like it'd just be easier to say because he had a tent that welcomed everybody.
Good. So why are they focusing on that? Excellent. No, we are Chazal seeing. What are they seeing in this? Who omed aleihem that creates that? Okay, one other question from the Midrashim, as the way Chazal describe, this will actually begin the answer. When Chazal described the pasuk, Vayimaher Avraham Ha'ayala El Sarah, so Avram runs to his tent to Sarah, and he says, Mahari Shalosh Soyim Kema, hurry up, let's take all of this flour and the cattle, we're going to make this meal. Says the Gemara, Me'ezes Chus Zokhli Yishol Shinitam Lemon Ba'midbar, in what merit the Klai Yishol merit the mon in the Midbar? Chazal clearly linked, and we're going to see they're going to point something else out, but they linked the things that happened to Klai Yishol in the desert to what Avraham does here in his guest. But in what merit do they have this chuso shel Avram? Shenemar, what did Avram do that merited the man? Shenemar lushi v'asi ugos. Knead and let's make cakes or bread. What's the problem with the pasuk that Chazal are bringing that we merit? Why did we merit man in the midbar? Because Avram says to Sarah, "Mahari, quick, Lushi needs some dough and make some cake."
What pasuk? They didn't eat that cake.
Yeah. Well, what pasuk would you have brought without quoting the little pasuk? What? Why would we get man? Which part of the story would you quote to say because Avram did this, we merited man?
The flour.
Just in general, that he gave him food.
Yeah, he gave him food. What pasuk do Chazal quote?
The entire pasuk.
Not just the specific. What are they being specific about?
Creating the food.
Right, when he said, "Come, let's go make food." So I would have said, on a simple level, if I said we're going to link the fact that Avram serves his guests to the fact that we get man, so I would have quoted the pasuk of that he placed before them, or vayochelu, that they ate. But the Chazal specifically point out when Avram says, quick, let's make cake. So because Avram said, let's make cake, Chazal get the man. Why are they focusing on...
That doesn't seem like that's such a problem. Avram went like out of his way to give them and make and create things that didn't exist to give to them, the same way Hashem kind of created.
Oh, so you connect to the fact that
he didn't just say, "Oh, I have this laying around here." He went and specifically made.
Okay, good. Right. Hold that thought. Excellent. No, but he was. We don't want to just focus on the fact that he actually served them, but that he needed to create which wasn't there. To
get giving
it.
Them leftovers, he's giving them fresh.
Making it for them.
Maybe all the man was fresh when it came down.
But I want you to know that the cholent and the cake were made today.
Fresh.
It was not like leftovers from last week.
The soda's from last week.
The soda's a little bit leftover, but that's right. The cake is fresh.
I'm okay with leftovers.
So the Rosh Hashiva is the Tzav Govich. Addresses this last point with the following: there's a Gemara in Ksuvos, a very odd Gemara that gets quoted often because of its oddity. The Gemara comes from Rabbi Chiya. The Gemara says, if it were up to me, if we ever got to a place where Torah was about to be forgotten from Klal Yisrael, where I saw that it was going to be lost, that there was no one left who knew how to learn, and it was up to me to revive it, I have a plan, he says, that I can make sure that I could revive it, and that it will never be forgotten from Klal Yisrael. Says Rabbi Chiya, why he felt the need to even tell us this story is unclear in the Gemara, but he says, if it were to happen, that Torah would be forgotten, I know what to do. He says, what would I do? I would go and purchase some flax seed, and I would plant the flax, and I would harvest it, and I would make a net. And then from the net, he says, I would go out and hunt a deer, capture a deer in my net. I would then take the deer and shecht it and give the meat to some poor people. And then from the skin of the deer, I would make cloth. And then from the cloth, I would write a chumash. I would take five students. I would write out brachos on one and shmos on another. And then each one of the five students, I would teach his sefer. And then each one of these boys would be responsible for teaching each other the sefer that he had learned. And then from the cloth, I would write out the mishnayos. I would take six other boys. And I would teach each one a seder of mishnayos. And then when he knew it well, I would have each one of the boys teach each other, and this would guarantee that then Torah would not be forgotten, because from here it would spread, and we would no longer have any problems. And the obvious problem with this Gemara...
Why not just go to the paper store?
Exactly. Like, what do you... This is a very strange story. We could save a lot of time and energy here. Instead of like planting flaxseed and waiting for it to grow, to make a net, to hunt a deer, to get caught.
Good. I think he's saying that because of Torah, he's trying to make it from a pure point of view.
So exactly,
it has to be made from
you
the right point
got
of view.
It. And so the Vilna Gaon points out exactly that. He says this is Vilna's like, what in the world? Like, what's he saying? Says the Vilna Gaon, there's a Torah that's Tishtachna, there's a type of Torah that can be forgotten, and then there's a type of Torah that can't be forgotten. And if you want a Torah that's not forgotten, exactly as you said, it doesn't. You can't go to the store and just buy a chumash and think it's going to work. It has to be from the very moment of the inception of the idea that it's done what we would call lishma.
Or a scroll.
Right? Right? Just buying the art scroll. When I gave a class on the oral law, a week or two ago, and so I started the class with the question as to why b'chlal did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create a system where we have a written law, we have a chumash, And then we have this whole other concept of this Or. Why do we need it? Why is it necessary to have a Torah Sheva'al Peh? Why not, you know, do it in a way where it's already... It ended up being written down anyway. Right. And that was a problem, it was only because it was going to be forgotten. So it's still done in a way... Well, like, write it out. What's the problem? And there are a bunch of answers as to the elements of what we have, but there's one very similar, which is very important. Do you own a Shas?
Yes.
Do you own a Shas?
No.
You own a full Shas?
Not a full one.
We've got to get you one.
By all means.
We'll use Zani as an example. Zani, you own a full Shas, right? How much of that Shas do you know? Right, the same as the rest of us.
Not but every book that I have.
Right, but every book there, right? What do you do? What do you do with the Chumash? I have a Chumash also. How about a Tanakh? Who here owns a Tanakh? I own a Tanakh. What do I know from Tanakh? I know nothing from Tanakh because it's written down.
You should have gone to Torah school.
I should have gone to Torah school. I would know much more in Tanakh. So you, if you have a book, you buy it. What do you do with it? You put it on your shelf, and that was done. But if you have an oral law, you can't own an oral law and say, "Oh, I have it. I put it on my shelf." What's the only way to get an oral law?
To learn it.
You got to learn it. You got to know it. I got to sit down with the Rebbe, and he's got to communicate directly with me, and I have to imbibe. It has to become part of me. Otherwise, I'm not going to know it. Mm-hmm. So the oral law actually created a concept that Torah would remain alive in the Jewish people for all the generations. Because if it weren't oral, then we'd have a lot of shelves and a lot of books. And ignoramuses who don't know anything. And the Torah will be lost. That was not referring to Dani. That was referring to... That's referring to the level of knowledge of Tanakh as an example of Klal Yisrael.
Yeah,
it's right? Which is even... We've so now we have it even better. I don't even have it on my shelf. I have the entire Bar Ilan on a disc. And how does that help me?
I know that if I ever need it.
They still sell it on discs, even today. I called them just this week because they needed to update. And for an extra $100, they'll give you a flash drive.
Right.
But the standard way they sell it is they still sell it on a disc.
It's cheap.
But like, it doesn't help. Now it's on a disc, but it's not part of me. And so the fact that it was a Torah Sheva'al Peh created a system in which it had to be done, which you can't get it. You can't just go into a store and get it. You have to earn it. So the Vilna Gaon points out from this Gemara that that's the concept of lishma. If you want a Torah to be created in a way that it will remain true, that it will be able to be kept, and that it won't be forgotten, so then it has to be done in a way that it's from the very inception, it's done in a way that's lishma. And in Devarim Shel Ruchnius, in spiritual matters, you find the concept of lishma. Even, like, tzitzis have to be made lishma. A pair of tzitzis that's spun or woven, and the strings weren't made lishma, they're not tzitzis.
It was the string itself or the actual tying?
The string. The strings have to be made lishma. Pair of tefillin, if you say for Torah, you couldn't go, if you wanted you need to actually have for pair of tefillin, you couldn't just go into your local cloth store and pick up from the moment that it's done, it has to be done lishma. And we say it in the opposite way, when you make something lishma, that cloth now can't be used for something else. Just the intention that you have in making it actually creates a reality within the entity that you're working with, in that it now has a different status than anything else. It is now imbued with that kedusha of whatever it is that you want to make it with, and the thought process that you have in making it creates a different reality. We say that even by tachrichin for a mesa, if a person makes shrouds for burial, if that's the intention that you have, so there's an entire sugya. Is it just the intention? Do you actually have to use it or designate it? But the idea, that the thought processes that we put into things actually has an impact when it comes to gashmis. There's no such thing. If the person who built this table was thinking that he was going to use it for whatever he's planning on using it for, it doesn't make a difference. Once he makes it, the table is what it is, and I don't care about what his intentions were. It's done in the physical world, however it was that he did it, and that's it. But when it comes to Dvarim Shebe Kedusha, the actual intention that a person has actually has the impact in what's being done. So when it comes to Chesed, or Midos in general, there are different approaches that people can have. There are lots of nice people out there. And you say, people in the world, Jews, non-Jews, religious, secular, nice guys. Really nice, bona fide, to the core, nice people. They say, why are they being nice? Why are they so nice? So there's an element there that they're nice because they understand that's how society functions. Society won't function without that. And they really buy into it, and they believe it. And they believe in, they want to do the right thing. which is different fundamentally than the concept of Mahu Rahuma Fatafanun, that says, I am a Kadosh Baruch Hu and I am a Baal Chesed, and I want you to act like me. And when you act like me, you're actually becoming godly. Not just because it's the right thing to do, not just because it's a nice thing to do, which it is, but that there's an element of, there's something more here. There's something of, I am mimicking my Creator when I do this, and I do this because of that.
I mean, it's like what we discussed the first week, is God created the world with a din of Rahmanas, and
right.
Chesed, and that was imbued in the world. Therefore, it exists, and therefore people reflect it. I mean, maybe they don't know why, but... So
the difference, there's a difference in why a person's doing something, whether or not they're understanding that and what they're doing is godliness, or they're being a nice guy, they want to be a nice guy. One of the ways that it manifests itself is in, let's take an example. You're driving down the street, it's raining, and you see somebody doesn't have an umbrella. So you stop and you pick them up, you say, where are you going? I'm going to Target, you were going the other direction, and give you a ride. We headed that way, no, I'm not, don't worry about it. No, I'll give you a ride, get in the car. And you give him a ride. Would you call that an act of chesed?
Yeah.
Yeah, no?
Yeah, for sure. I would want to choke. That's what I did.
Right? And in a sense, that's true. But in a deeper sense, the Chovos HaLevavos, for example, says it's not really chesed. It's rachmanas.
Yeah, pity.
You feel bad for the guy. Yeah. You're the guy walking, it's raining, you don't have an umbrella. Never.
So it'd be chesed if it was sunny outside.
Exactly. And there's even more of a chesed than that. But that, so the first letter is, now how vile we should all stop and pick up the guy who's walking without an umbrella. I don't want to make it seem like, well, that's enough. It's a, like, we do need to pat ourselves on the back for doing it, and it's going out of our way, and we should do that. But at the core of what it is that we're doing is really built upon a feeling that we feel bad for the guy. And the proof to that would be, if as you're driving down La Vista and traffic is moving slowly because there's a new island on the top of Biltmore and traffic is sometimes going slowly,
so
you're slowly, right, and you see that up ahead there's a guy walking in the rain, and you're like, and you have that thought in your head, that dialogue of, oh man, I really need to stop and pick that person up. I don't want to do it. Ugh, fine, I'm going to do it. And the car right in front of you stops, and you see the window go down, and there's a conversation, and the guy gets into that car. And what's your reaction?
Phew!
Yes! That's the proof that the reason why you're doing it, it's based out of Rachmanas. There's a need. I see a need, I feel bad about the need, and as soon as the need dissipates, it's good to go. I'm all happy. I don't have any problems. What's the main word? Rashi has one word when he describes the reaction of Avraham as he's sitting at the front of his tent and he's waiting for guests to pass by. No one's there. And Rashi describes it, based on Chazal, with one word that distinguishes Avraham as the father of our people, different from all of us. He was bitzar. He was in pain. Not pain from his mila, he was in pain that there were no guests. There's no one here. And it bothered him that there was nobody there. The difference between proactive or reactive, I see a need, I feel bad about the need, fine, I'll fill the need, versus, I'm not doing this because there's a need out there that I see. I'm doing it because I need to be doing this. I have the need to be involved in chesed because there's a godliness aspect of it that's more than just Rachmanis, I feel bad, what's out there. I have to be constantly doing the things that the Ribbono Shel Olam is doing, which is about chesed, so that when Avram is removed from it, it bothered. He actually was bothered by it. Well, our reactions would have been like, phew, Baruch Hashem, somebody here, a night off, this is great, it's quiet. There's nobody here, it's not my problem. Whatever. If somebody would show up, of course I would entertain it. But there's nobody here, so it's great. It's like when that call comes in, you know, 11, 12 o'clock, buddy got stuck at the airport, or this, and like, oh, God, of course I'll go get you.
Then you stayed at a hotel.
Right.
Easier for you.
Right, and then 10 minutes later, you're about to go out the door, and he calls me and he says, never mind, I got a ride already. Right? Who's upset about that? They're not upset. It's like, phew, fabulous. Didn't want to do it. I was going to do it. I was even going to pretend I was happy about it. And now that I'm not going to do it, that's great. Well, gosh, that's fine. So Avram is actually bizarre when the opportunity to extend himself wasn't there. He usually did this chesed, people would come to his house, and now nobody was there, and it actually bothered him. And Hashem, when he sees that, sends him these malachim and says, this is something that needs to be done. And they saw, the malachim saw, in the fact that he stood over them to serve them. And in the sense of, that creates a different, there's a different type of chesed. Like, you know, when you're at somebody's house and you could tell, like, you're visiting for, let's say, a chasna or a bar mitzvah, you're out of town. There's just a different way that somebody takes you into their home, in which they're basically providing you a room, and then there's a opportunity in which they're actually, like, you know, you could tell that they actually want to be nice to you. They want to see what you need and help you out. And that concept distinguishes, I don't have any need. They're looking to find what, like, it's not like I come upstairs and like, do you have any water? Yeah, sure. No, they're like coming downstairs with bottles of water. When you're fine. That's the difference. So Avram's Omeid Aleihem is he's standing over them to see what it is, like where, what, it's an initiation, and that's why it's in the Mahari Lushi Vasyu. Go, let's go make the food. It's in the Hachana, the thought process, the Lishma that begins at the very beginning of the episode where Chazal see Avram distinguishing himself in that particular concept, which results in the presence of Hashem coming with us, results in the malachim like almost frightened, like a human being act like, we saw this up in Shemayim, this type of midah of Hashem taking care of the world, but we're sent down here to these human beings, and to see in Avraham the type of trait, the type of chesed that is a godliness type of thing creates in a human being.
So they were in awe because almost in a way they were in the presence of God.
Exactly. That's why the Anonim HaKavod, not the physical food, the mud or the water, but the Anonim, that's what came out of the merit of who Omeid Aleihem, of Avram standing over him. That ability to serve and serve in the type of chesed that doesn't say just because you're lacking something. The way the Chazal say it elsewhere, they conclude with this medrash. Chazal say that there's a medrash that describes the difference between Avram and Noach in the type of chesed that they would do. Right. Or Eov, excuse me, wasn't Noach, it was Eov. Eov, the Gemara says, would host people, and those who were accustomed to eating fine meat, he would give them fine meat, and those who were accustomed to drinking old wine, he would serve old wine. And Avram, those who were not accustomed to eating fine meat, he would serve fine meat, and those who were not accustomed to drinking old wine would give old wine. Meaning, Eov filled the need. What's your standard? This is your standard? I'm going to give you whatever you're used to. I don't want to go below your standard. You're used to good fancy foods? I'll give you good fancy foods. But if you're not, then you don't know what you're missing. So if you don't know what you're missing, I need to serve you the top quality steak that I have. I'll give you whatever you have. You're going to be very happy with the lower grade because that's all you've ever eaten before. And Avram would serve people who were not even accustomed to eating that because he wasn't looking to fill their need. He was looking to give because he needed to give, and he was going to give the best quality that he can. And that's a midah that's demonstrated by, I'm just going to hang out here to make sure that I'm looking to see what it is that you need, not wanting to just respond to your needs. I'm in pain over the fact that I don't have any guests, and I'm therefore in advance in the lishma before it even gets started. It's in the action of getting it ready that Chazal see the merits for all the things that are going to happen in the Midbar. It's in that distinction, that distinguishing himself in that type of chesed where they see that element, and that's the Midbar of Rin. That's the heritage that he gave us, that concept of being godly in our chesed because it's godliness, being proactive and looking because we need to give, not just reacting because we feel bad to that which it is that we see out there. Alright.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.